Hello, it's Sammy here, and this episode of Fulhamish is supported by NordVPN. Now, NordVPN is a way of watching sporting events, TV shows, and films which aren't available where you are by switching your virtual location of your phone, tablet, or laptop to a country which is. Particularly perfect for those 3 p.m. kickoffs which aren't televised in the UK. And right now, you can get an exclusive discount by going to nordvpn.com/fulhamish. Not only will you benefit from their already huge discount, but you'll also get an extra 4 months for free. You can use one account on up to 6 devices. Also, it's completely no risk thanks to Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So to get that special rate plus 4 free months, go to nordvpn.com/fulhamish or hit the link in the description of this podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Elizabeth Barnard and welcome to the show. Today we're looking back at a comprehensive 2-0 away win in the Premier League. How many times have we been able to say that this season? It was a sunny day in West Ham, putting behind us a series of tempestuous results at the London Stadium. And I've got a wonderful panel to do that with. First of all, joining us is Drew Heatley. How are you doing, Drew?
Elizabeth, I'm doing really well. What a lovely Sunday afternoon walk in the park.
Absolutely. Also joining us is Sarah Keogh. Welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Liz, and it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Lovely. And finally, last but not least, Dan Cook. How are you, my friend?
Doing very good. I'm riding the crest of this wave. It's a lovely Monday. We had a nice couple of drinks at Crate Brewery beforehand. I know it's a favourite of Drew's as a local. It was dreamy. Sundays don't get much better.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Sundays do not get better. And I think you have some 3-word reviews for us.
I do. And I want to sort of congratulate the Hive Mind. I feel like these are the best 3-word reviews I've seen as a collective in a long time. They were fantastic. Sometimes you see like one will get 60 likes on Twitter, but there were like 4 or 5 that were racking up big numbers of likes. It was a good day. So if we start with Jakob Krupa, who gave us 007 in reference to our aggregate 7-0 victory over West Ham this season, which is a good one. Scott Maltman gave us double bubble Fulham, which again, you got to bring the bubbles in. Londinium Calling gave us forever doing doubles, which I loved. Chris, with a very underrated one, I thought, which was Pere sauce as a sort of loose Andreas Pereira sauce reference, which I really enjoyed. And then finally, we had two here. One from Matt Wall with wobbles ironed out. And finally, Jason, slightly pessimistic, but also optimistic, safe from relegation as we officially can no longer get relegated.
Those are great 2-word reviews. Yeah, as you said, it's really high quality this time. Thanks to everyone for writing those in. Drew, I'll start with you. West Ham away has not really been a happy hunting ground for us over the years, but it felt like quite a good time, considering them playing in Europe and stuff, for us to turn the end of our season around. The lineup dropped at 1 p.m. and it felt kind of to me like what we'd expected, our strongest lineup. Were there any surprises there for you about how Marco chose to set up?
No, I think we're sort of getting into the rhythm now, aren't we? As we enter the home straight, getting into the rhythm of what we think our best 11 is. I know there's been a flex throughout the campaign when it comes to teams where we think we're going to have more of the ball and whatnot. But obviously the Lukic revolution continues, and I think he's really established himself there now in the centre of the park. So you know that was not particularly a surprise to see him come back in. But it's amazing, isn't it? West Ham, not a happy hunting ground at all. But I was quite surprised to see that the last time we won was our first, I think it was our first Premier League season with goals from Lagrinsky and Malbrank, which is insane. I mean, I remember a Paul Konchesky goal there for us that was a long-range pinger, but I think that might have been to salvage a draw. So I didn't realise it had been quite that long. But these are the joys we're finding in this season, aren't we? In these unexpected moments and these small little records, unfavourable records that we've been breaking. It was no real surprises in that lineup, and as it proved, more than enough for the Hammers.
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely just had more than they did, I thought. Sarah, it felt like quite a good time to play West Ham. Like, they played in Europe, I believe, away on Thursday night. And I think from the beginning, we were able to capitalise on them being so tired. Did you feel like we had a bit more energy in this game overall? Obviously, there was the early Antonio chance, but I felt like we had a lot more intention.
Yeah, I thought the first, until we scored, and it was great that we scored early on, I did think, you know, they'd had a couple of opportunities, and Koufal had sort of gone past Robinson and Bassey quite easily, and then Leno saved and Antonio skied it. And at that point, I thought, oh, is it going to be one of those days that we expect that they'll be tired after Europe, especially as it was an away game for them, the travel and everything. But then as soon as we scored, it reminded me of when we played Tottenham. With the Tottenham game, from the off, you just knew it was our day and we were winning it. And from scoring that goal, that first goal, I just thought, actually, this is our day. And from then on, I just think, you know, West Ham, whilst they had a couple of chances, it was always going to be our day.
Not to diminish Sarah's stance on this, but I, at halftime, I turned to Farrell next to me and I said, I can't wait to find out how we managed to lose this game. I completely agree that we just never looked like losing it, and it just felt so inevitable that we would. But I think, again, like, as much as we laugh about the Fulhamish stuff, I do think Marco Silva has done an incredible job in trying to reduce our Fulhamish tendencies, and yesterday was a prime example of that, I think.
And I think the Sheffield United and the Nottingham Forest results, you're okay to think like that, Dan. I think, you know, to be less confident.
For sure. And as you mentioned, the first goal was a good sign of intention from us about the way that the game was going to go. Even if everyone had those fears, it's West Ham away, we always lose here. Getting into the ground was a little bit of a faff. I certainly found it. I think I was checked 3 times by security, neither time thoroughly. But Dan, I believe you managed to make it to your seat in time for the Pereira goal. Do you think it was a good bit of skill from Pereira, or was it just really poor from West Ham? I love the way it sailed into the net, but really, I feel like the West Ham defenders need to be doing better with that.
Yeah, I think Mavropanos should do a lot better. And funny that you mentioned the Antonio chance as well. I wasn't in the ground when the Antonio chance happened. So for me, it was an even more dominant 2-0 win, because I think that was probably their best chance. So it doesn't count if I didn't see it. But where I was walking to my seat as Iwobi put, what I think on the pitch looked like a little bit of a speculative cross, but actually watching it back on telly, you could clearly see that he was trying to pick out Muniz making this run. And Mavropanos makes a poor decision, but I think Pereira deserves a lot of credit, and Marco spoke about this afterwards, for picking up some positions that maybe we've criticised him for not picking up in the past, getting into those parts of the pitch on the edge of the area, in and around it, where actually he can cause issues and get into goal scoring opportunities. And I think from the moment that he spots the opportunity, he deserves all the credit, because I think he does brilliantly with that first touch to go around the keeper. The finish is almost too good, unnecessarily good. He didn't need to hit the roof of the net. Like, it genuinely at one point looked like he'd hit it across the against the bar. So that, but he did really well. And I think we've sometimes criticised Pereira for his, not necessarily just his finishing, but like his one-on-one chances. Pereira's had quite a few chances one-on-one where he's not quite good at right, but this seemed a lot more decisive. First touch around the keeper, second touch in the back of the net. And it was really good to see, and really promising. If this was intentional, which it sounds like from Marco, if getting Pereira into this position more often, hopefully it's something that we see again and again going forward, because he's clearly dangerous if he's in the right parts of the pitch.
100%. I thought he had such a good game yesterday, and I thought overall the attack yesterday, the patterns were there. In the first half, we were creating quite a few chances, like almost getting to the step before clear cut chances are created. And we looked really dangerous. However, we didn't manage to capitalise on our 1-0 lead, as is so often the case. And that's why everyone was so worried at halftime, because we've been here before so many times. Andreas also had quite a significant miss at about the half-hour mark. Drew, were you starting to get worried too? Or were you thinking, you know, our dominance will play out, we'll be able to put West Ham away?
Oh no, I wasn't. I wasn't in any way optimistic. It's the West Ham being up to park and then the London Stadium, just conditioned to just think we weren't going to do it. I think Andreas put us ahead last season, early doors as well, and we all know what happened there, a couple of handballed goals and whatnot. So no, I wasn't, but I think it was our highest XG of the season on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, which, you know, I'm not entirely sure what it means, but the nerds love it. So I'm just going to drop that in there. but a quick note on that Antonio chance at the beginning. Look, he's making a career, post-football career, out of taking the piss out of people on his podcast. But the man's wearing gloves in 15 degree plus heat. So he should have been immediately sent off for entering the pitch with those on. So, you know, just need to point that one out. But yeah, no, I think... it was a real coming out party for Andreas yesterday. You know, he is often criticised because he's in that headline grabbing position of the 10, where we're expecting, you know, double digit assists per season and maybe even double digit goals. But you know, for what we got him for, I was talking to somebody at work this morning, and a Man United fan who said he thought Andreas was going to do the business for United. But obviously, if he was going to do that, we would never have picked him up. And for 10 million and what we got for him and what actually he's been consistently delivering, I mean, he's already surpassed his assist total, I think, or at least equaled it this season. And so he is consistently delivering overall. And, you know, he has ups and downs like everybody else. But I don't know. I just think for what we paid for him, I think we're getting what we paid for. And long may it continue.
Definitely. Definitely. I don't think there was much more in the first half of interest. But the second half started off with an absolutely absurd backheel from Rodrigo Muniz trying to score. I was coming up the stairs and I would have toppled all the way back down had that got in. Sarah, do you think that he just tries to score outrageous goals? Is that what he's all about?
Yes. If it's not a bicycle kick, a scissor kick, a rambo, if it's not one of those, what is the point of scoring it? That's how I think Muniz feels at the moment. I mean, it just shows the confidence that he must be feeling to think as quickly as he did, back kick, back heel, this ball. And the thing is, you know, we sort of joke, but can you imagine if it had come off? You know, it would have been the greatest goal that we've seen, apart from the one that he scored at Sheffield a couple of weeks ago. I just think the confidence, he's only 22 years of age. He's had a little, it's not been the greatest time for him. You know, he came to Fulham 19 years of age, didn't really settle, went up to Middlesbrough. That, you know, as we all know, he didn't get to play. It must have been difficult for him because, as we've now found out, didn't really speak that much English. To go up to Middlesbrough on your own, 20, 21 years of age, he's come back. And you can see now the little, you know, the Samba gang that we've got at Fulham. And I really feel that, you know, Willian and Pereira, they just look after him like he's a little brother. And that has really brought him out. And I think we need to give Willian a year's extension just to babysit Muniz for next season, even if Willian doesn't play, just to look after Muniz, just to bring him on, help him with his English. Because, he's going to be an exceptional player for us. I really think that. How long we get to keep him, that's another thing.
Yeah, definitely. He's such a fan favourite already. And I should mention, and nobody had this on their bingo card, Premier League Player of the Month, Rodrigo Muniz, which, wow. And those who haven't seen it, his lovely friendship with Pereira and Willian, the video of them surprising him with the award where he bursts into tears, is so charming. And yeah, there was definitely something in both my eyes while I was watching that.
And I think it shows how humble he is as well. You know, he was absolutely shocked, blown away, you know, tears. He said, you know, he didn't know what to say. You can just see how humble he is. And I think that's why we've all sort of, you know, fallen in love with him, because he's like playing every boy's dream. You know, he's just living his best life at the moment.
I think it's really important to note that obviously now he's won that Premier League Player of the Month, that people are going to be waiting for the come down. People love the rise and they love the fall, and people are going to be watching. And if he goes a couple of games without scoring, it's going to be the curse of the Player of the Month, etc. But I think it's really important to note that yesterday he contributed. Like, he had a fantastic game. And that's what's been one of the hallmarks of this rise of Muniz, is not just the goals. He's not been hitting them off his ass every game. He's been making those runs. He's been in those positions. He's been contributing for 90 minutes. He's turned into a complete striker. It's not just the goals. It's everything about his game. So, although he didn't bag yesterday, it's definitely really crucial to point out that he was still fantastic. And I don't think the fall is going to be coming if any player haters are sitting there waiting. I don't think that they're going to be happy anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree. I thought he had a fabulous game yesterday. We'll come on to him again in the questions. Dad, we've had a lot of love for our attacking players so far, but I wanted to pivot and talk about our defence because I thought they were all outstanding yesterday. West Ham were quite impotent, but it felt like we were quashing their chances really effectively and Leno didn't have that much to do. For me, Bassey was the standout player, not only on the back line, but throughout the match. Would you agree, or was there anyone else in the defence that really impressed you?
Yeah, I think he was the standout. I thought he was superb. And it's not really actually any different to what we've seen pretty much from when he came into the side. And I've spoken about this a few times, but that we have for once sort of nailed this succession planning element where we brought Bassey in this summer. We started off the season with Tim Ream in there. Bassey came in through necessity, and then that movement has happened gradually and perfectly where Tim Ream has sat back, he's on the bench, and Calvin Bassey has just been so dominant ever since he made that shift to actually being able to play on the left side of the two centre-backs. And we know he had his problems playing on the right-hand side, not his fault. And I think everyone understood that at the time. So I think we've got a real gem. I thought he was superb. He bullied their front line. I thought there was one moment, and I was watching the highlights back, where he showed such maturity as well, which was West Ham had a corner that broke to the edge of the area to Kudus, and he beat one man, he beat another, broke into the box. And at that point, I think some centre-backs maybe a bit rash, think he's going to take a shot, they dive in. Calvin Bassey just stood up and just showed him towards the corner flag. And eventually Anthony Robinson came in, they nicked the ball off him and we broke up field. And I thought those elements of, like, not just he has the physical traits of being a dominant centre-back, but he's clearly learning how to be a smart one as well, is so important. And I think he is such an asset in terms of he's going to be sought after. Teams are going to want this, you know, as football gets increasingly sort of stretched and turned into these transitional games where you talk about teams are, you know, every team has got lightning quick players and they're really good on the counter attack. You need centre backs now who are capable of handling that and dealing with that. And so having someone like Calvin Bassey who can beat pretty much anyone in a foot race, but also will beat them in the air, is incredible. And so I think that was such a shrewd purchase and another example of Marco Silva picking a player up potentially at the lowest point in their career and providing them with a springboard to just go and flourish again. And so, yeah, I agree with you, Liz. I mean, me, you and Sammy had a little bit of a tiz in crate after the game about who was man of the match. But I think in terms of this is the difficult discussion. I think everyone's got different opinions on this. Is the player of the match the best player on that day on the pitch, or was it the most effective? Because Andreas Pereira was the most effective. He scored two goals. He deserves a lot of credit for that. But in terms of who actually played the best, I really do think it was Calvin.
Yeah.
Calvin Bassey related sort of tangent. His performances of late and the attention that he's starting to get really terrifies me, because Tosin is off. I'm putting my house on that. I've told you that before. He's going top six Premier League club because he's free and he's English and he's gone. Robinson, I think it's probably after this season, I think it's fair to say he's going to be subject to a few offers, think he's gone. If Bassey's going to be courting some suitors as well, then we're in trouble. Mune is grabbing the headlines. I don't think he'll go, but you know, you're getting all of these all links because he's got some goals. I'm slightly worried about the summer because I feel like more than ever before, we're going to be subject to quite a few exits. Some we expect, some we don't expect. And that's a bit terrifying, but he was great yesterday.
One of the things that it sort of surprised me a bit, because he's not known for being great with his feet, if you see what I mean. But there was the drag back that he did, pass to Robinson. Robinson then did the pass to Willian, and that's when Pereira, it could have been 2-0. And I just was, when I saw that drag back from Bassey and that confidence and then the pass out to Robinson, I thought, that's something, that's a bit of your game. We don't see that often. And it was great to see that he's now sort of using that technique, rather, as you were just saying, Dan, his physicality and his speed. There was skill as well that he's adding. And I thought he was immense yesterday.
Definitely. I thought something that was so impressive was how much, so much of our attacking play was coming from him and our back line, but Calvin Bassey in particular. Yeah. We'll come on to the second goal. It was a great goal, a lovely bit of work from the team, obviously some poor defending, but it was the goal that made the game comfortable. Perhaps, Drew, you'd like to put in a word on Pereira's performance generally, find it snuffling up those chances, finding them and delivering two goals that made the game comfortable for us.
Yeah, and I think he was linking up with Iwobi really nicely yesterday. That goal, the second goal, was obviously the simplest of tap-ins, but it was a lovely pinpoint little ball. I saw a tweet this morning from Random Fulham Stuff, who's always good for a stat, sometimes not so random either, some really interesting ones. He says 234 men have played for Fulham in the Premier League. 115 have registered at least one assist. And there's only, I think, in this picture, 13 or 14 that have done double figures in assists over their Premier League careers. And Pereira is in the top 10. He's in the second season. So when we talk earlier about delivering over the course of the season consistently, even if there are ups and downs, I think that probably says it, doesn't it? He's in the top 10 for assists in the Premier League for Fulham already in two seasons. And I know yesterday he bags the actual goals himself, which is the part that people were really saying was lacking. And if you look at his figures over the past few seasons, he's, you know, it's a real steep upward curve when he joins Fulham. You know, we got him after some questionable numbers, really, going out on loan in Brazil and all this, and now he's actually you know, on a real sharp trajectory. So yeah, it was a real as I said earlier, a real coming out party, I think, from yesterday. And ever since he got called up to Brazil, I think, as Sammy says in his positives and negatives piece on the website this week, ever since he got that call up, it's really boosted his confidence. And I think we have this at Fulham. We have a lot of players who are real confidence-based players, which I think sort of tells in the stats of, you know, we score first, we win, and we don't score first, we really struggle. I think I don't know whether all fans of every club think this, but I do think that we're so sort of reliant on that confidence, and seems to be Pereira as well. But at the moment, he's full of it.
I also think that second goal, if the defending is bad by Mavropanos for the first goal, the collective defensive effort from West Ham for the second goal is the biggest shambles. It is hilarious where you have, like, a defender comes around the cover to try and deal with Iwobi, and all Andreas Pereira has to do is keep running in a straight line. And it's good movement. Like, it's not, I'm not putting Andreas Pereira down here, but the fact that there's three West Ham bodies back there and no one thinks that maybe we'll mark the guy 6 yards out from goal is incredible. And they sort of do that brilliant, like, comical moment that happens after all those sort of goals where they all turn around and look at each other and hold their hands up and, like, whose fault was that then? And it was just, it felt too easy. I was with you, Liz, when I think you said it on the quick take, where at first you thought it was offside or something because it just seemed too easy. The fact that he was that close to goal, unmarked, able to put the ball in. But you watch it back and everything was just timed perfectly. And it was another example of those sort of lovely transition. I mean, if you could create, like, a hallmark Fulham goal of this season, it would be Polina crunching someone in midfield as we then fly down the other end with Rodrigo Muniz spearheading it, feeding it out to Alex Iwobi, and in this case, Pereira putting it away. I think that's a real sort of trademark Fulham goal. And it was, whilst terrible from West Ham, very good from us as well.
Definitely. Yeah, I thought it was offside, but it turns out Ben Johnson was just stationary, which is odd, but it benefited us, so no complaint. Sarah, I'd love to chat with you about the substitutions. When Marco made the subs quite soon after the second goal, he took Iwobi off, which I thought was fair enough. I didn't think Iwobi was having his best game. And then he took Pereira off. We've touched on previously that maybe this is a fitness issue, but I was really frustrated by that substitution because A, Pereira had the chance of a hat trick, but B, I thought he was really running the game in the attack. And then also, interestingly, he took Muniz off for Broya right near the end of the game. I wondered what you made of Marco's substitutions yesterday. He's caught quite a lot of flack recently for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've had previous games where the three substitutions he's made have actually made it worse than it was already. So I know he's got a lot of flack. I think yesterday, I mean, I did actually think with the Mooney's Breuer, was that because we've got to give Breuer minutes? That was the only reason I could see, you know, because of this whole £4 million thing. That was the only reason I could see that he might take Mooney's off and put Breuer on. I was again surprised with Pereira. As you say, he was playing exceptional. And also he's got that fitness level, you know, to do the full 90 or 105, whatever the games are actually now being played at. So, yeah, I was sort of quite surprised at those. But with the Iwobi, like you, less surprised because he had a couple of chances and obviously he had the assist for the second goal and he started off the attack for the first goal. So, you know, but for him, I just don't think he was having a great game. But yeah, I wasn't sure about that. I mean, I don't know with Marco, we have a go at him for getting it, for leaving it too late before he brings subs on. And then he brings the subs on and we're like, oh, okay, you know, we don't think you're bringing the right subs on. So it's, you know, it is difficult with that.
I do think on the Breuer one, I will throw my hand up. It was one I was calling for, and it, not just because I'm half Albanian, but I think that there was a moment as that game got deeper that the one thing that Breuer offers that I think is very different to what Mooney's offers is in behind pace. And actually, we didn't use it after he came on, but the game got a bit weird and bitty, and I think that's probably why. But as West Ham pushed higher and higher up, I did think that maybe if you have both Breuer and eventually Traore on the pitch, there are going to be moments where there's the possible that there's just one pass can unpick an entire West Ham side. We saw it in the Arsenal-Villa game yesterday as well, where as the game got deeper and Arsenal were pushing to get that equaliser, it just took one ball from Tielemans over the top of Arsenal's back line and Ollie Watkins was in. And I wonder if that was a sort of a similar move because it, whilst Mooney's isn't a slouch, Amanda Breuer is much more of a getting behind striker, I think, than he is. And I think that probably was why that decision was made. And I thought it was a little bit of a shame. And I have felt bad for Armando through this loan spell that there, whenever he gets a chance, it either feels like a hit and hope moment, like when he came on with Raul against Newcastle and he didn't really have a chance to affect the game. Or yesterday, he has a little bit of a chance. And then we obviously see that horrible injury to Earthy and the game sort of petered out into nothingness. So I think it was, I feel bad for him. I sort of want him to have a moment and I don't know if he's going to get that. And again, this is partially my Albanian bias. I want him to do well because I'm proud to have an Albanian playing for Fulham. But also on a personal note for him, I think this loan spell couldn't have gone any worse. And so it would be quite nice for a little silver lining at some point for him.
Yeah, I do see that. And my opinions on the substitutions, however frustrated I am, I just think in Marco, we trust. Like he generally, you know, he gets most decisions right, even if it's not all the time. Drew, I wanted to speak to you about the head injury to George Earthy. Before we do, I just want to say, like, I'm sure I reflect the views of all of us that we hope he's okay. David Moyes said on Match of the Day that he's speaking and alert and awake. So that's really good news. I hope he's doing fine. And there was a really long stoppage in play, as there should be for an injury like that. There was a little bit of discussion about Fulham fans singing during the injury. From my perspective, I was in the away end. I wasn't aware how serious the injury was, and I don't think we were singing anything that disrespectful. I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I've got a couple of thoughts on that. I think I unfortunately couldn't make it yesterday. Various dull commitments meant that I was not there. But look, I think a couple of things. One, we all know how far away the pitch is from the stands in the London Stadium. So I think one thing is, you know, you probably couldn't necessarily see the severity. You might not even have seen it as a head injury. You might have just thought it was a coming together and it could have been a rib, it could have been anything, right? The other thing is when you're in a break in play, it's like the players sit there warming up on the pitch. Like, you know, fans need to keep their, you know, they need to keep their collective peckers up and they need to have a little sing song as well. I don't think anyone was being disrespectful. I don't think that's in our makeup as fans in Fulham, bar, you know, overall. I just don't think we're not that type of player in the fan sense, you know? So I just think, and I think as well, there was a West Ham Twitter account tweeting some falsities as well, which from by and large, everyone who was there said that was absolute rubbish. So, you know, in terms of being disrespectful, I just don't think that was the intention. I just think I think it's a bit of a mountain out of a molehill. But obviously, you know, it goes without saying, you know, everybody wishes the lad well. I mean, it's an awful thing to have happen at any point, let alone when you're just coming on to, I think it was his debut, right? So, you know, that goes without saying. But yeah, I think mountain out of a molehill in terms of trying to make something there that wasn't, in terms of any sort of intended disrespect.
Yeah. And I think also when you look at the fact, I think it's just one of those things, you say mountain out of molehill reflects the anger within the West Ham fan base, where they've had a really bad 4 days. And I think these are the sort of things that come out when there's ill feeling within a club. It's just trying to find something to be angry at. And there wasn't anything to be annoyed at here, but it acted as like a conduit for them to vent some frustration. And I think some Fulham fans have made the point on Twitter, but Fulham fans were singing. At the same time, West Ham fans were leaving. Like, West Ham fans were walking out of the ground while George Earthy was on the ground. So I if anything, one of those is, it shows less respect than the other. And I see no problem with it. And I think all, as Fulham fans, we all know we are a thoroughly good fan base. You know, and I think there's always one or two. That's every club, but this is not something that I think Fulham fans would ever do. And we've been there ourselves. I'll never forget Anthony Niemi landing on his head at Craven Cottage, and we had 11 minutes of added time then. Like, every club's witnessed something like that happen to their player. There's nothing behind Fulham fans being disrespectful here. It was just people on a Sunday afternoon out in the sun having a bit of fun while there was nothing going on in the game. And I think that's totally fine.
We saw when we played Sheffield United with Chris Basham, and I think that was slightly different because, as you were saying, Drew, that we're so much closer at the Cottage. We knew straight away, you know, you literally heard the leg break. You saw the look on the players' faces because we were that close. And that's why, you know, the ground was very quiet. But as you just said, Dan, you're so far away, especially if you're in that upper tier. And it was at the other end of the pitch, you know, you have no idea what was going on. We knew that the physio came on, and then when we saw that they were going to be stretchered off, but yeah, there was absolutely, you know, no disrespect intended from Fulham fans at all. We're not those sort of fans.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then the game really petered out after that. There was a very clumsy, shall we say, tackle on Sasha Lukic by Lucas Paqueta. And there was quite a lot of discussion that might be a red card. Personally, I thought that he was quite lucky to stay on the pitch. I wondered what you thought of that tackle, Dan. Do you think that he should have been sent off?
Yes. That was a really, really bad tackle. It's not even a tackle, is it? It's a kick. Like, he's not trying to tackle and win the ball at that situation. That was a complete, just a release of frustration that he himself had played very badly in the game. And West Ham fans actually post the game have been on his back considerably because he was at fault for both goals. He lost the ball in the build up to both of them. It was him who gave the ball away. And it was one of those where I think he was just, you know, head was in the wrong place. He'd lost a header just then. Sasha Lukic and Polina and Pereira had dominated that midfield and played him out of the game. And if you go through what is a red card in football, the definition of a red card in the referee's law book is excessive force / brutality. And I feel like swiping at someone's shin while the ball is nowhere near them constitutes both of those things. And we've seen it this season already with John McGinn against Spurs. Identical tackle where the ball was gone, he swiped at a player and he got a straight red. And when you look at consistency, it's ridiculous. That's not a red card. I'm glad it didn't affect the game, but I think it's not on doing that on a pitch. I think it, you know, you can really injure Sasha Lukic doing that. And I think that's pathetic from Paqueta. And it also has knock-on effects. You know, there are teams, including ourselves, in theory, still just, who are competing with positions for West Ham. And if one of their players should be, one of their best players should be out suspended for 3 games, that has an effect. So it even though it was at a point in the game where I think the referee took maybe the common sense route of it, that this game also doesn't need a red card because the game's gone, I still think there you have to send someone off for doing that. You can't justify just a yellow for that.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, I'm biased, but I think he should have been sent off for that.
I've seen West Ham fans saying it as well, though.
Yeah, that was the game, a very comprehensive 2-0 away win for us. We'll come on to, in part two, some of your questions, looking forward to the rest of the season. But we're going to take a break here.
Hello, it's Sammy here, and this episode of Fulhamish is supported by NordVPN. Now, NordVPN is a way of watching sporting events, TV shows, and films which aren't available where you are by switching your virtual location of your phone, tablet, or laptop to a country which is. Particularly perfect for those 3 p.m. kickoffs which aren't televised in the UK. And right now, you can get an exclusive discount by going to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. Not only will you benefit from their already huge discount, but you'll also get an extra 4 months for free. You can use one account on up to 6 devices. Also, it's completely no risk thanks to Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So to get that special rate plus 4 free months, go to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish or hit the link in the description of this podcast.
Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. I'm here with Drew Heatley, Dan Cook and Sarah Keeg. Before we get into your questions, a reminder that the Fulhamish live show at the Half Moon Pub in Putney after the Crystal Palace game is going to be happening. Tickets are still available. All your Fulhamish favourites will be there, and they're always so much fun. We often do like a live This Will Catch On. So hopefully we will see you there. Thank you so much, everyone, for getting in touch with your questions. There were some really, really great ones this time. I'm going to start with one about Andreas Pereira, which I will throw to you, Sarah. Do we attribute the Andreas renaissance to his Brazil call-up and the confidence boost, or do you think there's been a tactical shift from Marco that's allowed him to be more involved? And that's from Abath.
I think possibly a bit of both, but I think maybe more to do with Marco. After the match yesterday, a lot of the post-match interviews that Marco did, he said that, you know, they've been working with Andreas and they've been encouraging him to push forward and to get further forward. And I do think that maybe having that Brazilian call up has sort of maybe given him the confidence to think, I can do this, you know, I can push on, I can go forward. And there are two things that I absolutely love when a player scores a goal. It's the tapping of the badge or the running to the manager when they've scored. So when Andreas ran to the manager yesterday, it just tells you everything. For me, that was him sort of saying, you know, I've done it. I've clicked. Everything you've been trying to get me to do, everything we've been practicing in training, it's finally paid off. So I do think it has a lot to do with Marco. We've seen it with, I mean, you know, Pretty much we could name everyone in that squad who has been affected by Marco Silva. And I do think that tactically they changed it yesterday. And by doing that, it allowed Pereira to run a lot more freely. And we've reaped the benefits from that.
I do think we've seen maybe like a bit more of a spread in the way that Andreas can affect games, which I think is coming from Marco. His best performances probably of the whole season have been in the past month. And Farrell's mentioned it before, but it's sort of odd that probably our worst spell has been in the past month and Andreas has been at his best. But it seems like Marco is trying to work with him on how to be effective in individual games. And he spoke, as Sarah said, he spoke after the game about there was a serious intent in getting him closer to Muniz and getting him in the edge of the box into scoring, goal scoring areas. But we've also seen it in games. I thought against Newcastle, for example, he was really good. And it was actually his ability to drop a bit deeper and get on the ball and try and make things happen. And I think sometimes the criticism that I've leveled at Pereira, I always hold my hands up that I have been a big critic of his, and I'm never afraid to say he's played well when he has, because I do like him as a person. I just find him frustrating, is that he can be a bit one-dimensional and get lost in games because he tends to pick up the same areas of the pitch all the time. And sometimes the ball just doesn't find its way to him. But over the past month, it feels like he's starting to maybe get a sniff for where he can be most effective. And that is not always a hard and fast rule. It's sometimes an intuitive thing of knowing when is the right time to get close to Rodrigo and break onto the edge of the area, or when's the right time to drop a bit deeper and support in the midfield too. So I think there's credit from all angles again here. But I think Sammy had it right in the positive negatives. There's got to be a confidence boost from being in the Brazil squad as well. And what an amazing thing that is. And he definitely seems to have a lot of confidence in him. We see it with the flicks and tricks, you know, and some people like him, some don't. I think they're fun. I'm happy for him to keep doing it. And so a lot of credit all around, I think.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Drew, I'll throw this one to you. This is from Jewish White. Have we got the most likeable Fulham team ever? Perhaps second to 2009 to 2011. But we've all seen the videos coming out from the camp, and I'm feeling like these guys are my best friends. I don't know how you're feeling.
Yeah, I think they'll be up there, don't they? It's success really also breeds that love and affection, obviously, doesn't it? I mean, you know, when we had a team of mercenary loanees and we were going down every time we tried to get back up, I mean, I didn't have much love for many of those, and I know that some people did, but not for me, Clive. But this lot, yeah, I mean, God, from the Samba contingent to you know, the Basti and Iwobi partnership, you've got these, and I think we mentioned it before, you've got these like geographical, not even cliques, because they all come together as one great big whole, but you've got these different areas of the world and the players and coming together and building those little friendship groups, and then they all come together as a great big lovable cohesive unit. So yeah, I mean, I think they've definitely got to be there, and also, you know, what a great time for it to happen, because when, you know, in the current climate where we are not happy with certain elements of the commercially focused higher ups at the club, what a lovely thing it is to have the players and the manager that you can really get behind and love unconditionally. I think it's the perfect antidote as I sit here sweating, waiting for the season ticket renewal hikes to come out, which you know, could be in the next couple of days, seeing as we've won away from home. Cough, cough, we'll see. But it's the perfect antidote to that. So long may it continue. And God, you know, thank God Silva signed a new deal early doors, because, you know, Sarah, you mentioned Andreas running over to him, and he's so crucial. Without him, none of this happens. So thank God that we got him tied down early on, so we don't get to this position where I'm worried about 6 out of the 11 starters. Don't have to be worried about Marco as well, because he will bring in the replacements needed, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, definitely. Such a great group of lads, and really, with quite a lot going on off the pitch, really easy to love the team on the pitch. Dan, I want to throw this one to you. This one is about our defence, and specifically about Tosin. We've spoken about it before, but with fresh rumours this week that Tosin wants to go to Spurs, do we think it's time to drop him and start playing Ream or Diop instead? This is from Hazard. He doesn't think that it makes sense to keep giving him game time if his mind is already made up.
Yeah, I find this a really tricky one. And usually I think these things only really come out when there really is nothing left to play for. And I think there is still a whiff of something to go for. And also there's the financial incentives of finishing as high up as you possibly can. And for all the people making those shouts, I think it would be all the same people that if Diop or Ream came in, dropped a clanger, and we finished a point behind Chelsea, or we finished 11th instead of 10th, it would be the cause of like, well, why didn't we play our best team? And that's, so I think there's that element to it. I think I agree. I'm not entirely sure whether Tosin has decided what he's doing yet. And one surefire way for him to make up his mind would be to drop him from the team, because there's absolutely no way he stays if Marco sticks him on the bench or takes him out of the squad, because what incentive is there for Tosin to stay at that point? And we've seen it in the past. I think this whole thing of his reluctance to sign a new contract spans back to last season, when he saw himself drop for Diop, and he was quite unhappy through that period when he wasn't playing. Totally legitimately, I do think that probably some more introspection on his part would have been better, because he was dropped for a reason, but it clearly irked him that he'd been taken out the squad, and he's not signed a new contract since that point. And that was when our contract talks really kicked off. So I think there's an element to that. I still think we throw our full body weight behind trying to get him to stay. You play him in every minute of every game until the end of the season. You wrap him up in cotton wool. You say lovely things to him on the phone and hope that he decides that being the first choice centre back at an ambitious London-based club who are trying to vie for European football and make a real story of themselves is a more attractive option than sitting on the bench at Spurs or Manchester United. And actually he chooses that as his path. But I said it on a previous podcast. I do think that if he picks the right move, it could sort of teleport him into an England spot. You know, it could be a real jumping point for him where it kicks him onto the next level. It gets him into the England setup. And then that's what any player wants, right? They want to be playing for their national team. And he clearly has his eyes on that because he hasn't declared for Nigeria. They've tried to get him to play for them. He's kept on turning down the offers because he still sees himself as a potential England player. And I agree. We also know that Fulham players struggle to get into the England side by virtue of playing for Fulham. So I can understand why he may want to move. Whether he should move out of the squad, I'm not too bothered by it, just because I don't think that Issa Diop or Tim Ream are the first choice options next season anyway. So you're not really succession planning there. You're just taking someone out because they're not going to be here next season. And there's merit to that, but I still think we should try and be as good as we possibly can. And he's in our best 11, so he should keep playing.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Sarah, you mentioned earlier that we should be extending Willian's contract, basically so Rodrigo Muniz has a friend in the camp. We've actually got a question from Black, White and Fred about this issue. Does Willian automatically get an additional 1 year? He has played so well this season and keeps relative youngsters like Wilson and Adama out of the team. He doesn't appear to be slowing down from what I have seen.
Yeah, no, I agree. I joked earlier about giving him the extension because of his friendship with Muniz, but I definitely think just on merit, he should be given that extra year. He's 36, going into 37, I think, but his fitness levels are fantastic. You know, he's really great. And I do think the partnership that he's got with Robinson on the wing, and then also when they play with Kenny and they sort of, you know, have that triangle formation between them, we really need him in the team. He does bring something to the team that we'd be hard pushed to sort of get somebody on the cheap as we did with him. I definitely think we should look at extending his contract for at least another season.
Yeah, I agree with that. And for you, Drew, this one's for you. This is from Vincent. He asks, was this the best display from Muniz yet? Granted, he didn't score, but he was my man of the match yesterday and he bullied their back line.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a shout for it. It's like I was saying earlier, like, you know, people, the neutrals or the casual fans who spot the result will say, oh, he's drawn a blank, but it was the all-round play that he's had. And, you know, the goal would have been the icing on the cake, but ultimately you didn't need it. And it's just really nice to see how he's contributing all over in, you know, like the all-round striker. It's more than a purple patch. It's more than just a flash in the pan. It's more than Progregniak squared. It's a player who's blossoming under an excellent coach, a coach who he obviously, idolises, believes in, having a situation at the club where he's finally feeling comfortable with, you know, he's playing alongside a player he watched growing up in Willian, and Andreas is going to, you know, playing and training alongside him is going to make any player better. For Muniz, it's a fantastic thing to see, and I think it's going to continue. I mentioned earlier the curse of the player of the month. I think the last player to do it at Fulham was Mark Schwarzer, where we got it for February 2010, in which we played five games and he conceded one goal and we won three, drew two. And then in March, we lost all three games and conceded seven goals. So the curse of the Fulham Player of the Month is possibly a thing, but I don't see it happening with Roddy because he's in a real good place now. As Marco says, he's in a good moment, and long may it continue.
For sure. We had a suggestion from Julianne on Twitter that we should make his chant, instead of "his name's Rodrigo, Rodrigo Muniz," it should be his name's Rodrigo and he really likes to fish. And I thought, yeah, that's pretty perfect. I think things are coming for him. It's only going to be upwards from here.
Yeah, I rate that. I rate that. Give his personality a chance to shine across in the chant, because he is a card, isn't he? I like him. Like him a lot.
Absolutely. So our last question today is from Christian from The Telegram. With us, and I would like to throw this to all of you, and I would like a really specific answer from all of you, please. With us on the beach, what would be the best result to end our season? We'll throw it first, I think, to Drew.
I want us to be kingmakers, and I want us to beat either Liverpool or City. And if you push me for a super specific answer, I want us to beat City, because not because I want Liverpool or Arsenal to win the league. I'm ambivalent, but you know, they are the top dogs. So I'd love to beat City at lunchtime in the sun at the cottage, and throw the cat amongst the pigeons.
Dan?
I wouldn't disagree. I would say if we could not beat City, I would maybe prefer that, because I'm going to be in Greece that weekend, and I'd be really fuming if the number of times I've watched us lose to Manchester City, the time I'm not there, we win. It would be sort of typical. The obvious answer for me is Brentford, isn't it? Away at the G-Tech. But it's frustrating, because I think this weekend has sort of maybe already taken the gloss off any potential win there, because I think after beating Sheffield United, they're probably safe, which is frustrating, because it starts to maybe descend into a bit more of like a lose-lose situation, where either we beat them and they go, well, you were meant to, or they beat us and it's really embarrassing and they do the league double over us. I think, no, that's it. We can't let them do the double over us in the Premier League. It has to be Brentford away. We have to win. Even a draw, I'd be a little bit miffed. We need to get 3 points off them, because last season was so grim there. This season at home was so grim. Just that's the one I care about most.
Yeah, Sarah, I see you nodding. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I sort of, I mean, Dan's just mentioned it, but I had dreams of us beating them, and then last day of the season, Luton beating us, Luton survive, Brentford go down. That's sort of how I had the season panned out. But sadly, I don't think that's going to be a possibility now. So yeah, out of all the games that we've got left, I think to beat Brentford, but it has to be a 90th minute winner, a Muniz bicycle kick. It has to be.
For sure. And to add something different into the mix, I hope we beat Palace, so we have a really great time at the Fulhamish live show. Tickets still available, obviously. The last thing that we need to do is name the podcast. Dan, do you have a favourite three-word review for us?
I think I do. This was really difficult, and I'm going to feel really bad not giving this to Jakob, because I think on any other weekend, ordinarily, 007 would have won hands down. But I think I'm going to give it to Londinium Calling to commemorate the first time we've done it since 1965-66. We'll give Forever Doing Doubles. I like that one.
That's my favourite one too. So yeah, thank you so much to Londinium Calling for that. And thank you to my wonderful panel for helping me review the West Ham game. Thank you, Drew Heatley.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth. That was excellent.
Thank you, Sarah Keeg.
Thanks for having me. It's been great. Enjoyed it.
And thank you, Dan Kitt.
Thank you so much, Liz. And big thank you to you. A hosting debut and absolutely smashed it out of the park. Superb.
Definitely.
Well done.
Thank you. I've had a lot of fun. I've been Elizabeth Barnard. This has been the Fulhamish podcast. And we'll see you on Thursday to look forward to that big clash at Craven Cottage against Liverpool. Hope you all have a fabulous week. Come on, you Whites.